You know, for as long as I can remember, people have been asking me what I want to be when I get older. I guess technically I'm older now, but what's the next step? If you're entering that transition phase in your life, graduating college, going to grad school, or even just moving to a new city, we've got something for you.
All right, welcome to the brand new show, Transitions. I'm John Mim, and this is my co-host, Callie McCurdy. Together, we'll guide you from show to show and introduce you to Philadelphia's most inspiring entrepreneurs, musicians, comedians, and more.
There's nothing better than experience itself, and we'll be featuring guests on Transitions that are, to be honest, walking in shoes not so different from yours. Now that you've got a feel for the show, meet the rest of the folks behind Transitions.
Bienvenido.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. Let's get a round of applause.
Yeah. May 5th. It's a good day. It's a good day. Did you have any tequila today?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Maybe
later. Oh, I'm not going to be able to have any, but normally I would.
Oh, yeah?
Normally I would, yeah.
But not on May 5th?
Not on the working Thursday, John.
Yeah,
I'm a working gal.
That's
you
true.
Know?
You are working.
It's no fun between the hours of 8:30 and 5:30.
No, that's no good.
Mm-mm.
Regardless, though, what is good is that we're here with the Transitions crew.
We have a great show lined up tonight.
What do we got coming our way, Callie?
Well, tonight we have obviously a special segment. The man that everybody's talking about this week, although he's definitely no celebrity, but the death of Osama bin Laden.
I thought you were going to say Donald Trump.
No. Well, we can talk about him, too.
Good. But big in the news, huge in the news as well. There's a lot of other things going on in the country as well with the tornadoes in the south.
That's right. That's right.
Ripping everything up at the same time. It's crazy.
Yeah. And aside from, you know, the actual killing of Osama bin Laden, there's a lot of politics that surround it, like whether or not they should show, you know, photos of his corpse mm-hmm. and what our country is facing now. And does it bring closure to the 9/11 families? So 9/11 affected families.
Yeah.
Lots to discuss.
And we'll talk all about that later as well.
We will.
Janine and I will be talking about the PIFA festival that happened this weekend that she previewed last week, and we had two very different experiences at this festival.
She looks mortified.
She looks mortified.
Something happened. She doesn't.
Something
happened.
Happened.
Oh, I'm excited to hear.
So there were good times and bad times.
Some happier news too. She'll give us her review of Water for Elephants, which I'm anxious to hear because I want to see that movie, and I hope I still want to see it after she reviews it.
We're looking forward to that. And Dan Schmidt is, of course, covering the sports aspect. What is Dan doing tonight exactly? Do we know? Do we figure this out? Dan?
Dan came in late.
Way to oust him.
With his future glasses.
Oh, I have been calling you two out every time you're late.
I will start posting on Twitter, Callie is 5 minutes late. Callie is 8 minutes late.
Will
Callie
you tweet it at me? Late. Because I don't have enough people that tweet at me.
I don't even know how to use Twitter.
It's Mr. Gray. He's confused. The likes of Dan, the common folk.
Embarrassing tweet of the moment. I tweeted Ramona Singer from Real Housewives of New York today. How embarrassing is that?
What did
people
you do?
See that. They're like, what did she try to do?
What'd you do to her?
I tweeted her.
Can you talk about that in the air? Is that cool?
Yeah, it's fine. Just dropped.
Well, don't tell her husband.
An almond.
I will be discussing the Eagles draft that took place last Thursday. I'll also be breaking down the Flyers-Bruins series through three games. And I'll be discussing which minor league pitchers are helping the Phillies' major league team.
Ooh, juicy.
Juicy indeed. And speaking of juicy, we have a relationship segment tonight where we are talking about decisions that you make as a couple and sometimes the jealous friends and overprotective family members that maybe get in the way with their opinions. So interested to hear everyone's opinions on that.
Also very tangy. We've got a great show. Of course, check out all this and more online at transitionsradio.com, on facebook.com/transitionsradio, the Twitter, Callie.
Twitter at transitionsr.
With an almond in her mouth.
I did.
And every Friday from, of course, 4 to 5 p.m. on WYPF The Burn, 89.1 FM out of Radnor, Pennsylvania. So we can look forward to that.
That's too. Right. Let's Great. Get started.
All right. Take it away, whoever's up next.
So this past weekend, depending on when you found out, you could have found out Monday morning or Sunday night. I found out Sunday night in the middle of watching the Phillies game. Actually, my boyfriend's brother just got back from the Navy. He literally just got done. So he just came home. And I guess he must have texted his wife. She texted my boyfriend saying, Osama bin Laden is dead, which is a random text message to get. How did everybody else find out? And then, of course, they announced it on the Phillies game.
It worked its way through the crowd at the Phillies game itself.
It did.
When people just started chanting USA. That was pretty intense. I found out, I just turned on the news. It was supposed to be some kind of show, but the news was on, I think it was NBC. They said, breaking news, President Obama about to announce that Osama is dead. Of course, a lot of people messing those two words up as well, saying President Osama is dead or President Obama is dead, which is not true.
I heard somebody do that on
the radio,
today. While I was driving to work, and I was like, oh man, somebody already did that on another station. So that, but anyhow, I was watching the E! Network, and they were the only people who didn't.
They didn't?
Cut out that. Yeah, they were the only ones. I think it was like Chloe and Lamar was on, and they didn't cut that
did
off.
Did they run across the bottom?
No, but my parents, I know. At least they didn't, like, right when I was watching it, but then my parents called from downstairs. They had just turned on the news, and then that came on. I guess it was the 11 o'clock news.
Yeah.
So then I went on Twitter, and it was everywhere.
Why would you break in, you know, growing up with the Kardashians?
Yeah, right.
For world altering news.
NBC did cut into The Apprentice, though.
Yeah, which I thought was amazing.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, you know, wait, actually, that is a good point to address, is that one of the things they're saying about this breaking news is that it was broken all over the world without one word spoken from Twitter and Facebook. So I think it's interesting, you know, how everybody found out about it this time around. Obviously, we didn't have access to Facebook when the attacks took place.
There's one interesting story about how someone who lived right outside of the compound there in Abbottabad, who was, and that's the real name of it too, Abbottabad, Pakistan. Who would guess he was hiding out in Pakistan?
In a mansion. Yeah.
In a mansion in the suburbs, you know, all of his followers were out in the hills and, you know, trying to blow up themselves to get, you know, virgins and be martyrs and such.
Who knows?
It's a great role model. Anyway, there was a guy that was tweeting that he heard helicopters coming over. He was tweeting the news of the raid unwittingly, which is like, it's really weird.
That is weird.
Yeah, it's crazy. But the news broke eventually. So how does everybody feel? That's, I think, what we should really touch upon.
How does everybody
feel
about
this? Is this a celebratory feeling or something that is a little more held back more? I don't know.
I don't really feel anything.
You feel nothing.
I mean, as weird as it's going to sound, is like I didn't really feel a lot in 9/11. I was in 10th grade, so how old was I? It was 10 years ago, so I was 20. I was 15. So, I mean, I was like, how does this affect me? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know how to comprehend the world and everything like that. So, I mean, I didn't feel anything for when 9/11. I was like, okay, somebody punched us in the face. We're going to go blow the crap out of them. That was my understanding of, like, foreign policy. You hit us, we hit you back. Everyone, you know, shakes hands at the end of the day, and we're done. And now that this guy's dead, I mean, it's one head on a Hydra. So how happy are you when 1/7 of the head, you know, 1/7.
A very big head.
Yeah, it was a big head, but I mean, it's only one piece. So I mean, I don't know how happy I am. Al-Qaeda can still function without him. There were other people involved in 9/11. So I just kind of, I don't know if it's like lackadaisical or just like, it's not that I don't care. It's just like, I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
If you like, because he was such a high ranking member, I think more than just one head off a Hydra. Like a couple years ago, who'd they get? The number 3 guy?
I think they got his number KSM? 2.
Number Khalid 2.
Well, number 2.
I mean, the rest of Al-Qaeda knows, okay, this is what he knows. This is what they might find out. From all the stuff that apparently they raided from Osama bin Laden's compound, the rest of Al-Qaeda must be thinking they don't even know what the U.S. might know now. So I think it's an advantage there for all the stuff that
I didn't say it was big. I just said, to me, I'm about it. You know what I mean? I understand that everyone's going to be, you know, crazy about it. I'm just sharing my opinion. I know some people are going to be like hardcore, you know, we got them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And filled with jubilation. I would just, it's hard for me to kind of put myself in that kind of like devastating position where I don't know how to feel. Like I didn't lose somebody to Osama bin Laden. You know what I mean?
So it's kind of hard to, I mean, I found out the same way you guys did. I found out watching the Phillies game, and it's not like, you know, cracked open a bottle of beer and started making noisemakers in the street. Yeah, yeah. It's like, I'm like, oh, okay. Continued watching the game, which was a horrible game.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That it was.
That's all we care about.
And just went back to bed that night. I mean, I don't get the whole, you see, like, riots going on at, like, Penn State. The only thing I can say to that is, let's act like we've got to the end zone before, you know?
I agree. I think, for me, at first it was just sort of, like, disbelief. Like, you never thought you would hear those words, and you don't hear a lot about him anymore, so just hearing, like, Osama bin Laden is dead. Okay. And for me, it was just like, it's very awkward for me to think to celebrate somebody being killed. And not that, and I'm, you know, I'm thrilled that we got him in the sense that we took him down as a leader, but I don't know why he wasn't brought back alive or why he wasn't. And the problem is that the news has given, not the news, I shouldn't say it's not their fault. The military has given several different accounts of actually what went down in their raid. There has been, I think, three different accounts of it. One account is that it was a fire raid. The second account is that he wouldn't go peacefully and he shot at them. The third account, which I finally heard today, was that one person was armed in his camp. One person shot at them, or I don't even know if he shot at them. And that was it. So they just killed him sort of. You know, I want to know still what happened.
In cold blood is what you said. But Dan?
You don't have to be holding a gun to still be threatening. And from the looks of all the money and different things that he had on him, not just in his compound, on him, he was ready to make a getaway in 2 minutes probably. It's like going in a mission like that, you don't have time to sit there and be like, hey, can we ask you a few questions?
Oh, no, no,
you
no.
See please. Him pop.
It's not that I disagree that they killed him if it was necessary. I just would have wanted to ring him for answers personally.
He was also KIA.
Hold him for information.
You know, he was also kill on sight. I mean, he was that level of, you know, bad. It was kill on sight. It didn't matter, you know.
I mean, yeah, going off of what Derek said, I do think it's interesting what you were saying too. Like, I think he was one of those people where it's almost on the same level as, well, not on the same level, but as the same level, almost as Hitler, like, or somebody like, you just need to take down because almost of what they represent.
A symbolic level, yeah.
So I'm glad they killed him and because of, like, the closure for the 9/11 victims. But I hear what you're saying, Callie, about, you know, it is kind of weird to see people
celebrating.
I almost feel like it's a little bit barbaric, but I understand their feelings. Like I think it's closure for me. Like I didn't think about it on a daily basis, but it was nice to know in a sense that we had done that because it does bring a sense of American pride, but I'm like cautiously optimistic about the whole thing because I do think it brings up the feeling of, you know, fear and like what the other people who's, you know, next in line, what's going to happen now type thing.
We act like archaic and barbarians because he was archaic and barbaric. So, I mean, it's kind of fitting. You treat the guy how he wanted people, you know, how he wanted to treat people. So,
it's more of a symbolic thing, I think, what Janine was going back to. It's not just about a death of a person. I mean,
it's the death of evil.
Yeah, it's a death. Yeah, I mean,
evil.
You could say that, but it's the end of the face of a really twisted version of Islam and Muslims around the world, and something that's haunted us for a long time. And maybe even if we did go in there and kill them, as Pakistan is saying now, in cold blood, he mass murdered or orchestrated the mass murdering of 3,000 people on American soil in cold blood. I mean, who had no blood on their hands?
I will say that it was, just to touch on the barbaric side of it, is I don't think that we should have reacted. Like, I think the rioting and the running around in the streets cheering, that's what they did when 9/11 happened. I think, you know, we came in, we said we're going to get him. It took us 10 years and we got him. That is enough to show that if you mess with the U.S., we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop pursuing what we're pursuing. So I think it would have been a lot classier, if that word even applies to a country, to just hold our heads up high and go to the memorial sites and appreciate them. But as far as the end of evil, I don't think that we're any closer to the end of evil. You have now the 2, 3, and number 4 guy in line might be fighting over the number 1 spot. God knows what they're going to have to do to prove themselves worthy of the number 1. These are the things that sort of hit me immediately upon hearing about his death, is I was like, okay, we got him, but now what? Because now we just took down the number one most wanted man in our side of the world, and the number one maybe most appreciated man by some people over there. And there's going to be consequences to it.
Do you think Al-Qaeda is losing influence now? You know, now they lost not just Osama, of course, from the events that we transpired, but also the events themselves that have been going on in the Middle East. All the riots in Egypt and, you know, the revolts, I should say, instead of a riot. All those types of things. I mean, young people are starting to get a voice now. They're starting to find themselves maybe having jobs, a little bit more of a vote. Are they going to turn to something such as Al-Qaeda's dream of saying, if you kill yourself, you'll get these virgins? Well, why do I want those virgins now if I can get a job, if I can actually change things?
Well, it's not just Al-Qaeda that has that belief. That's what I think. It could be the end of Al-Qaeda. Maybe they're losing their strength. But who's to say that people who've left Al-Qaeda before haven't started their own terrorists? Like, it's not the end of terrorism, as everybody's been saying. It's the end of one man. And terrorism is still very much alive. So,
terrorism existed long before Osama bin Laden was born.
He just made it popular.
It did, but I certainly don't think I don't think we're in the clear by any means.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But for the longest time, we've been doing a lot of precautionary measures, and to what effect, you know? And I think we should still be cautious. I mean, and of course, I can't speak on all of it. I think we should still be vigilant. But to what point do we give up some of our own personal freedoms for that? And what personal freedom should we give up so that we can stay protected?
It's not the end of anything. Yeah. Like Callie said, the number two guy is going to come up and he's going to be like, well, I'm going to be better than Osama, and he's going to plan something way, way worse. So, I mean, it's cool that we got that guy, you know, the guy that we put in power and gave all of his guns and stuff like that, but we won't go into that.
I know that's...
But it's just... You know, there's going to be some loons are going to be loons. You know, crazy people are going to be crazies, and crazy people are going to attract to each other like, you know, crazy people do. They always seem to congregate. So there's going to be somebody else. Instead of Osama bin Laden, it's going to be, you know, the next guy coming down the pike.
And I know this is like a little far-fetched, but if you think about it, like, you know, Islam as a religion, you know, I respect that everybody has their own religion, but there are some dangerous thinkings to it, you know, dangerous thought processes that are associated with it, as we've seen. And, like, we're trying to change that, you know, change their way of you know, acting out on their religion. But imagine somebody coming here and I know this is far-fetched, but trying to change the way we think about Christmas. Like, we're not going to change the way that we celebrate or worship appease another country.
You got to think... The majority of Christians believe in, you know, a kind of middle-of-the-path Christianity, if there is something like that. But the majority of Muslims believe in, you know, the middle-of-the-path Islam. It's just a few people that go crazy.
Exactly.
Like Al-Qaeda or the people who choose to use God to kill abortion doctors or do things
like that. Or advertise for the end of the world.
Yeah, and things like that, which is coming. May 21st.
Mark your calendar.
Wait, does anybody want to know something funny?
What?
That guy had it wrong before?
The guy who's advertising that... actually requested to extend his campaign.
Oh, God. There, I saw this graph online. There's really like 10,000 dates throughout like recorded history where people have said it's the end of the world and it hasn't happened yet.
Are there even that many days?
I don't even know. I'm exaggerating, but you can see it goes back to like 830 AD or whatever, you know, BC, I should say, before Christ. I don't know, but it's there. Janine?
Well, I mean, I had something...
Really She's funny. Reel it back in, Janine.
I had something... Oh, okay. Reel it back in, because I had something funny to say about that. Islam was my point. And I think it's good that whenever Obama, like, does, like, when he made that announcement, that he always seems to not kind of put it on the religion, which is good for those crazy extreme people that maybe would like try and catch him in a phrase or something. I thought he was very well spoken because he said something about, you know, human dignity. Like, he always brings it back to a place
he
where
he said it in his speech. He said, yeah, you know, this was never a war on Islam.
Exactly.
You know, everyone who has respect, and I'm paraphrasing, everyone who has respect for human dignity should be happy by this. It's the U.S. was never at war with Islam or anything like that. So he makes it really clear, but it doesn't matter. Crazy people are going to hear what they hear because that's
true.
What makes them crazy.
We'll talk about that later in the show, about PIFA and crazy people.
Oh, God.
Preview of what's to come.
Any additional comments we had to say about Osama bin Laden in the face of terror? In the
I think they missed a real opportunity for a third Weekend at Bernie's movie. Weekend at Bernie's 3. What's the name town? Abbottabad.
Abbottabad.
Make it happen, Obama.
Abbottabad paradise.
Abbottabad.
Well, let me get everyone's thoughts quickly on whether or not you think they should release the picture of the corpse. This.
I don't know. It might ignite some more. Might do some more controversial hurt than it does any good. But although they did dump the body in the ocean, do we ever get to the bottom of that? Exactly why they did that? Because he needs to be. Because he needs to be buried. Right,
that's
within a day.
Part of Islamic culture. Yeah, you need to be buried within 24 hours. And
yeah, they did that
to
respect.
Majority of burials are at sea.
I'm actually glad that they did that. They did that to respect the Islam religion and show that we're not barbarians.
That's the fake one, by the way. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead,
Dan
though,
Schmidt's
and say that.
Dan passing around the photo that's been leaking around, and this is the fake one.
Oh, wait, while we're on this leaking stuff, do be careful, because I did hear on the news that there are a few links going around on the website about Osama that you can click on it, and it's like it shows you like his mugshot and most wanted, and it's actually a virus, so steer clear of that if you can. It's a hacking.
Gotta love internet scumbags. Yeah. Any opportunity
use
a virus
Osama
in
to
computer.
Hack. I guess to finish off on the note to answer the question, not a lot of people did. I think that if the public is asking for the picture to be released, maybe it should be released, and it should be, you know, at a certain time, broadcast what time it will be released, you know, if you don't believe in it. But I just think that it is journalist's job to serve the public. And
anyone who thinks it might be too graphic, I'd like to point out that we've made 5 frickin' Saw movies, okay? People can handle it.
But this is what's happening in our world. You need to see it.
I mean, I could play devil's advocate. I don't want it to go on too long. But I mean, I guess the only other side of that is I'm not sure if it's playing in. I mean, I hear you with what you're saying with the Saw movies. It's true. Like, we have such a glorification of violence in arts and entertainment. And so why not show real things that are affecting our country? But I like your compromise idea, Callie, because personally, I don't need to see it. Like, if the president gets on TV, I believe him. But if you need that proof, then fine. I think that's a good idea with, like, the time.
Heavy warnings.
It's a good idea.
Keep kids out of it. Not circulating on the internet.
I'm sorry, when Al-Qaeda posted the video of that guy from Pennsylvania getting his head chopped off, I want to see the bullet hole. I mean, tit for tat. And I think that's a good place to end it.
Yeah. All right, guys, well, feel free to share your comments with us anytime on Facebook page or Twitter at TransitionsR. You can even comment on my blog at thezish.blogspot.com. Janine's following me. Follow it if you'd like. And all right, on to what happened at the PIFA festival.
PIFA, woo!
It was really funny.
So this past weekend, PIFA held a festival, a very festive festival, to end their long running of, was it French-themed culture? Was that it, Janine? Mm-hmm. Anyway, Janine and I both went there along with intern Alex.
No,
separate.
No, there's no clapping. It's intern. Yeah. That's her name.
Anyway, on the final day, they shut down Broad Street in Philly between Chestnut and Lombard and had a huge crowd out there. Many, many people came out to ride the carousel. By the time I got there, it wasn't running. By the time I got there, a lot of the stuff had gone away. But the pièce de résistance, however you say that, was they had some trapeze artists that they raised above Broad Street. And this very elaborate display, this blooming onion type structure where they had a band playing at the bottom of it and 3 trapeze artists. I imagine they would go back and forth across Broad Street, but they didn't. They did a couple tricks. Anyway, it was wonderful. It was great. I had a good time. It was an awesome time. Janine, however, had a different experience. So along with her is intern Alex to explain what happened on the other side of the tracks. Yeah. So what happened at PIFA, Janine and Alex?
It started out interesting. We got there around the same time as you, actually, Jamin, maybe like a half an hour earlier at 7. And, you know, all the vendors were closing down. And we got there, and Alex was really hungry, intern Alex. And so, but everywhere was closed. Like, everywhere was closed except, what was the building, Alex? The one building that we went into, I forget the name of it. It was really nice.
I'm pretty sure it was, like, the Palm Hotel, if that's even a place. I was just really hungry, and all I cared about was going and getting food. And we were with our my sister, Natalie, and she works in Philly, so she knew this place that we could get food at, because we tried a whole bunch of different vendors, and everybody was, like, done. And so we went to this place and got some burgers, and
Alex is forgetting. She gets up to the counter to order after, like, forever, and she goes, I would like a burger, and the girl goes, we're out. It was a burger joint, and, like, I had ordered a veggie burger. You think that they, like, wouldn't have that, but no, they're out of regular burgers.
No
and then
one
she's
eats
like,
veggie burgers,
okay.
That's why.
Well, yeah, me, I do. But she's like, well, we still have turkey burgers, and so Alex is, like, very nice about it, and she's like, oh, okay, I'll have that. And then she's like, would you like cheese on that? And Alex goes, yeah, American. We're out. So she ended up, she wanted a burger with American cheese, and she ended up with a turkey burger with provolone cheese. And she's a really good sport. Me, on the other hand, I guess I was a little cranky about it. I'm like, this place gives me the creeps. And, like, there was a guy working there. I guess I said a little loudly. And, like, I don't know if he, like, got mad.
Was
or
this
if
the
I
homeless
was...
guy?
No, this is a different person.
So this is the second person
I
you offended.
I was rubbing people the wrong way this night. Hold on.
It
was
the city.
It was a pretty bad night. It was not that great. It was funny afterwards, but when we were there, it was not very fun at all.
This is like baby's day out on
so it right? is like yeah. baby's day out.
Janine's day out.
So I said, I hope he doesn't spit in my burger. I'm pretty sure he heard it.
Oh,
and
Janine.
Like, it was bad.
Bad form.
And he like walked away and was like, I'm leaving, I'm done. I don't know if it was because of me, but and we finally get our orders. We're the last ones down there because the place is closing. The last place to get food, and we're the last ones there. And
you definitely got it spit in your burger.
Well, no, because the lady making my burger wasn't even the same person who took my order. We had to say our orders again.
They didn't actually take our order. We had to tell the lady again. She came up and was asking us what we wanted, and we're like, shouldn't you know? Yeah, she didn't speak English also.
So, but we finally got our burgers. Like, I mean, there's a story in the burger place in itself, but we need to keep progressing here. So we went out with our burgers, these big, delicious-looking burgers. And
were they good?
Mine was, but Alex's wasn't cooked properly. So Alex wanted to go on the Ferris wheel, and she's never been on the Ferris wheel ever in her life.
No Ferris wheel?
Like any Ferris wheel or just that particular one?
I'm afraid of heights, so I don't go on Ferris wheels, but
they're
I was
like
feeling really brave
feet
that
high.
Day. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I get nervous at 6 feet, and it's, like, really bad, so I just don't do them.
But you were feeling good because you ate a turkey burger and you had
I
some
was
power.
Feeling good. I was feeling that good that day. Burger. Actually, I was really excited going there, and, like, before we left, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go on the Ferris wheel. And then we got there,
such
and then the whole
for
thing
a
with
young
that
person.
Burger happened, and I was like, now I'm kind of nauseous. I'm not too sure about this. But and then
Janine started
in,
punching people.
We ran into the most delightful homeless lady ever. She was just...
Explain this incident.
Yeah, let's get this...
All right.
The suspense
here's
is
the
killing
facts
me.
Of it, because I'm afraid. All right, so... We went out with our burgers in our hands, and I was, like, chowing down on mine, you know, because mine was delicious. And this lady goes, I thought she said, do you have a penny for my daughter? I didn't hear anything about food. And so I said, you know, I was trying to think of something, because she looked like she was stationed at this Ferris wheel, and we were going to have to wait. So I said, not thinking, usually I just say, I'm sorry. And that's it. I was like, no, we just paid to get these. And she goes, what did you say to me? And me.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, what did you say to me? And I me thinking she just didn't hear me, said, we just paid to get these. Like, we don't have any more money. And she's like,
you wanted
her
to
eyes,
fight someone.
Her eyes beaded out of her head. She had no teeth. And she opens her mouth real wide, gets up in my face, and she goes, don't you ever talk to me like that. But she said the other thing. I was like, oh my God, is she talking? And so we peace out. I was like, let's go. Forget the Ferris wheel. This woman is going to attack us. So we just turned down the street and...
That's not exactly what happened. That is pretty much what happened, except for the fact that the lady did not get in her face. Janine and I had already started walking away because as we were approached by this and everybody, or she started yelling at Janine, I said, I don't want to go on the Ferris wheel anymore. Let's just leave. So we started to walk away, and then the lady started yelling at her. I thought she was yelling at my sister Natalie because my sister Natalie was like right next to her. And then Janine just kept saying, are you sure you don't want to go on the Ferris wheel? I was like, one, Janine, the Ferris wheel is closed. Two, I don't want to go back there because that homeless lady started chasing us a little bit. And then as we started walking away, Janine just kept saying, is anybody turning around to see if the homeless lady's following us?
Cardinal rule of dealing with homeless people. You don't interact with them.
You don't turn your back. You quietly interact with them. I have two separate instances. One instance where I went into a Dunkin' Donuts and some guy stationed outside of it, and he always asked for a tea. So the girl I was with was like, I think he asked for a tea. I was like, oh, okay, I'll get him one. I gave him a tea. Second time I went back there was just 2 days earlier this week, and this time I asked him if he wanted a tea. And he follows me and orders a tea on my card. I go, that for him, and I'll have this. And they give it to him, and he's like filling it with sugar, like complaining. I'm like, I'm not buying you any more tea, man. You didn't even say thank you. Peace out.
See, the correct way to interact with this lady, because she was obviously crazy, is just to say, I'm sorry, walk away.
No,
you don't even answer.
Oh, no, well, you just ignore.
Don't even acknowledge.
Okay, well, that was the right way to talk to her because she didn't talk to me after that. I walked away. Janine.
I thought you said she was polite.
Janine took her burger and waved it in front of the lady's face.
And then spiked it on the ground.
Yeah, we just paid for these.
I paid
for this burger. I only hate half of it. Straight and you're misfortunate.
But I'm not made of money. But
and
no,
then she stepped on it.
I genuinely did. I was like very naive about it. I mean, I wasn't prepared. Alex, first of all, she asked her first. So I was just like, she's not going to bother me. Like, I was trying to be like considerate about it. I think I could have said anything to her. I could have said, you can have 5 burgers, and she would have been like, what did you say?
Yeah,
like,
I wouldn't know why she was offended by you telling her you just paid for a burger.
Said it, probably.
So that was our night in the city. Needless to say, it was kind of fun, but only after we got on the train and were like, you know.
When you were leaving the city.
Except for the attempted homicide at the end.
So just be careful. Don't talk to homeless people. Lesson learned. Just or say, I'm sorry, or be nice about it. I don't know.
Dan Schmidt.
You ever read the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie? That is actually a book about dealing with homeless people.
And on that note, to be continued, more adventures in the city with Janine. That lesson is learned, though, for sure.
Lesson number one, don't talk to them.
This was about the PIFA.
No, and by the way, yeah, that was the other part I wanted to get to. We didn't see anything. No acrobats. That was it. The Ferris wheel.
Homeless
and it was
people
dinky.
Ruined everything.
Maybe the homeless lady was hired. You know, maybe she was next.
She was the wrap up act to get everyone out of Broad Street.
Get away from here! I want your burger.
John Mim, I'm glad you had a fun experience. And then on the way home, I get this text from John Mim. We're on the train, and he goes, "Did you see the acrobats?" And I got so mad. I was like, "No, I didn't see any acrobats. I got cursed at by a homeless person." So we decided to talk about it on the show.
Absolutely.
All right. That's going to do it for that story.
Let's give a round of applause for Janine, intern Alex.
Flyers and Phillies and Eagles, oh my.
You read my mind. I was going to do that.
I know. So who else but Dan Schmidt has all of the info on our Philly sports teams. Dan?
All right, welcome back to another week of the three-pointer. Dan Schmidt joined, as always, by the coach, Dave Bennett.
How we doing?
Today, we got three all-new topics coming at you. We're going to be breaking down the Eagles draft, going to be reviewing the picks that they took, specifically in the first couple of rounds. We're going to be breaking down the Flyers-Bruins series through 3 games.
Yeah.
And we'll also be talking about the Phillies getting contributions from minor league pitchers that were not expected to be a big part of the team when the season began. But first things first, let's start with the Eagles. Draft happened last week. Eagles, as always, like to surprise people. Sometimes I swear Andy Reid makes his draft picks just to mess with Mel Kiper Jr. As usual, Eagles make some controversial selections, selecting 26-year-old guard Danny Watkins out of Baylor, going with Temple safety Jaquan Jarrett, going with Utah State cornerback Curtis Marsh, and going with Clay Matthews' brother Casey Matthews, all with their first 4 picks. Coach, what was your take on the Eagles draft?
First off, Danny Watkins, you know, I can deal with that. You know, he's an offensive guard, first 4 years playing football. ever in college and all that. He has some room to grow just as a human being. You know, he hasn't been in a major lifting program, so he could gain some weight, get some size and some strength. Not a bad pick to shore up the O-line. You know, he looks like a beast. Not saying he's going to light the world on fire, but Jaquan Jarrett, I look at him as a little bit less athletic Nate Allen. He hits harder. He's a little bit bigger of a guy, and he has a little bit more room to grow than I think Nate does. But he's really got to work on his coverage skills. They were lacking at Temple. Granted, he averaged, you know, 78-plus tackles a year, plus, you know, quite a few interceptions in the last couple. But my biggest concern was their third-round pick going cornerback with Curtis Marsh. He's over 6 foot, over 200 pounds, I believe, but he's a project. He played running back 2 years ago. You can't do that. You can't take a guy in the third round that's a major project like that. Me personally, I just don't agree with it. I know in coaching, granted, I coach little kids, but you know, you don't look at a kid that is a lineman, well, he can probably play one day at D-back. Well, you don't play those kind of games. You take a guy who you know you can play, but we'll give him a shot and see what it is. Casey Matthews, real quick, born and bred to be a linebacker. His whole family pretty much played either offensive line or linebacker in the league, I believe. And hopefully he can step up to the plate like his brother did.
Now, looking at the Eagles draft, they did take a lot of projects.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they took two guys who will be able to help them next year. First one being obviously Danny Watkins. You know, mm-hmm. He's one of the oldest first-round draft picks, basically, in the history of the draft.
Yeah, 26 years old.
But I think that by drafting a guy that age, what they're expecting is that he is going to start right away next year. Hedging their bets on the fact that he'll be able to pick up the offense a lot quicker than someone maybe, you know, 3, 4, 5 years younger. He's going to be more mature, going to be more of a leader on that line, on an offensive line that really hasn't had that fierce leader since John Runyon retired.
Yeah, it seems like he's going to take the John Runyon place, although I really do think that that's Todd Harriman's job this year.
And then drafting with Jaquan Jarrett, Curtis Marsh, projects like you said. But I think Casey Matthews is another guy who can really help them out next year, especially if he manages to put on 10 or 15 pounds in the offseason. Eagles linebackers have just been leaving a lot to be desired, to put it nicely, pretty much the entire Andy Reid regime other than Jeremiah Trotter. And I think bringing in a guy with a pedigree, coming from a family of linebackers, I think this is a smart move on Andy Reid's case here. I just think that Casey Matthews can bring something to the table that the Eagles linebackers haven't really had, and that's a history.
I agree. If he can get up into the 240s, you know, 245, 250 range, I think he'd be a good fit.
All right, well, let's move on to some more disappointing news. The Flyers just, there's no other way to say it, they just got steamrolled the other night by the Boston Bruins, losing 5-1. Not much to say. It doesn't look like their year. That's pretty much all you can say. They've gotten completely outplayed in two of the first three games, and the game that they completely outplayed the Bruins, they lost because of the hot goalie. And I think what you're seeing through these first three games is a microcosm of the entire season. Flyers played goalie roulette, and they got burned. And they got burned at the worst possible time with their star defenseman out, who usually covers up a lot of the goaltending deficiencies.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's going to be one of the things they absolutely have to address. Leno might have to take a little bit less money, to be honest with you, next year. Versteeg, I think, is in the last year. I think if he comes back, because he hasn't been playing too well, he's going to have to take a little bit less money, because we're going to have to afford a goalie. It's going to happen. We need one. So the sheer fact that we are as small as we are at this point without Pronger, you know, even Carter just coming back the other on Wednesday, it's a necessity. It has to happen, and hopefully, you know, Paul Holmgren figures it out.
The goalie situation absolutely killed them this year. It absolutely did. And I think that despite the fact that they made it through their first-round series with Buffalo, they made it through, and all their problems were exposed. They are a weak defensive team without Pronger. They are a very, I don't want to say docile, but they don't really put a lot of fear into you on the back line of the defense without Chris Pronger in there. And when your goalies are playing as terrible as Brian Boucher, Michael Layton, and Sergei Bobrovsky have played in the playoffs, there's just no way you're going to win. You could assemble a team of all-stars. And if you have goalies that are giving up goals the way Boucher, Layton, and Bobrovsky did, you have no chance of winning. And I think 25 years is a pretty long time to go before you finally realize we need a goalie, because the Flyers always have these issues where they run into the hot goalie and that's how they get knocked out of the playoffs, but they never seem to realize maybe one year that could be us if we just go out and actually put some thought into the goaltending position. Not go with a retread like Brian Boucher or a cast-off from another team like Michael Layton or some kid out of Russia like Sergei Bobrovsky that nobody knows anything about. It's time for this to end. It's time for them to get serious about this position. Because even Andy Reid eventually realized he needed to get wide receivers if he was going to pass the ball all that
time. Absolutely.
If the Flyers are going to play as an aggressive forechecking style as they play, and that's how the team is built, to play an aggressive forechecking style, you got to have a goalie back there who can bail you out sometimes when you get in too deep.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it has to be addressed in the offseason. And at the same time, they got to pick up their play in the playoffs. I mean, it's really just a poor showing of the quality of talent they have overall. They really have guys just kind of going through the motions, thinking that it's just going to work out because it worked out, one, last year, and also in the last series because they played so poorly. You can't let up in three games against Boston, almost 15 goals? You can't do that.
I mean, a lot of those are softy stuff.
Yeah, but you can't do that. As a team, whether it's the goalie, the defense's fault, the forwards, which the forwards are playing terribly right now, you just can't have that as an overall unit and a team. It's got to change in something.
But when you play the opposing offense perfectly and the goalie lets up a shot uncontested from 50 feet out, what are you going to do? It's completely demoralizing. Completely demoralizing to work so hard to score a goal on a goalie like Tim Thomas, only to have your backup goalie, who, because of, you know, a lack of respect to the goaltending position in the Flyers organization, your backup goalie coughs up the goal immediately, you know, 2 minutes later. It's demoralizing. It's an impossible way to play. They got lucky with it last year. They got extremely lucky with the goaltending situation last year. This year it came back and bit them.
They got lucky in the first series of the playoffs.
They got lucky in the first round this year. In an elimination game, game six, their goalie did not show up.
End all be all is that it's ridiculous, and it really needs to be addressed because it's actually getting downright embarrassing to watch. That's all I got.
All right, well, let's move on. We'll end it on a positive note. Let's talk about some of these Phillies pitchers that have come up from the minor leagues this year and have really started contributing right away. First one I want to talk about is Vance Worley, who has come up in relief of Joe Blanton, who went on the disabled list with an elbow issue. And Vance Worley has turned in two very, very strong starts.
Worley's come in there. He's throwing some really good balls. Straight. He's got a lot of movement on his fastball and his sinker. Even his changeup moves a little bit. And it seems like, one, he's got the upper hand because no one's really seen it before. I mean, you know, let's just throw that out there first. That's how every pitcher first comes in the league, unless they're throwing
pitcher
great
pitcher does
fruits.
Have the advantage first time around.
You know, pitcher has the advantage because no one knows who he is. No one's seen him. But all in all, he's put a really, really good first two starts together. You know, hopefully Bland can come back. Yes, we want a more dominant, or not dominant, I would say, but more consistent guy in there than a hope and a prayer for a Worley. But, you know, for what he's been asked to do, he's really done it. I mean, he's shut down, you know, not too prolific offenses by any means, but shutting down the Nationals the other day. And I can't remember off the top of my head who he started with the first time. I believe it was the Marlins. But either way, you know, came in, had some pretty good starts, put some things together, had a couple strikeouts, got into some trouble, but also got himself out.
And that was the Mets, I believe, that game you were thinking about. Right. But Worley has looked really good. I think he's setting himself up to be a very desirable trade piece coming up towards the end of the, or towards the middle of the summer, I should say, when the Phillies will be looking for a bat. The other two guys I want to mention are Michael Stutz and Antonio Bastardo, especially Bastardo, who has just been basically unhittable so far in the early going this year. And I think it's a really good sign that the Phillies are able to bring up these pitchers from their minor leagues who can make guys swing and miss. Because that's how you build a bullpen. You build a bullpen with guys who don't walk the opposing hitters, put them on base, and guys who can miss bats, you know, strike guys out. Don't let the ball get put in play and increase your chances of something going wrong. And I think, you know, seeing the progress that these guys have made coming up through the Philly system, it gives you a lot of hope. When a lot of experts were predicting that the Phillies farm system had been completely wiped out in acquiring Cliff Lee and Roy Halladay, and Roy Oswalt, too, as well. But I think seeing these kids come up shows you that they know what they're doing down there in the minor leagues. They really do.
I agree. And at the same time, you know, outsiders looking in are always going to judge, well, they're the cupboard's bare and all that stuff. And also, to go in line with that, you have to look at, all right, some guys are going to just have good years. You can't depend on that year in and year out, but it is. It's a great sign that we have guys that can come up and make the plays, and those are the guys you bring in. You ask them to do what they're supposed to make up for you guys you're missing, and it's come along very nicely for the Phil so far.
It's just good to see that even though Pat Gillick is no longer the general manager of the team, that they are still drafting exceptionally well. And you know your team is going to be good for years when you see guys coming up like this. And I know the Phillies are a very old team as far as the average age goes on the Major League roster. But knowing that they got these, you know, bullets downstairs in the cupboard, it's reassuring, to say the least. Well, that's all the time we got this week. We had two bits of good news sandwiched between a piece of bad news, you know. I think that's a good way to do it. I'm Dan Schmidt. I want to thank the coach, as always.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to throw it back to John and Callie, and we'll be back next week.
Dan, thanks for all that great information. Be sure to check out Dan's blog, Three-Pointer, on our website at transitionsradio.com for even more. There's a lot going on this week in
Philly.
What is it?
What's going on? 60 seconds or less, Janine, go!
In music, previous Transitions guest Steve On Point will be performing with Mike Tyler's The Friday and Monday Happy Hour this Monday, May 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the legendary Dobbs located on 304 South Street in Philadelphia, PA. In theater, the Act 2 Playhouse in Ambler, PA will begin previews May 10th for the next show of the season, Art. The show has been described as Frasier meets Seinfeld and takes a look at the question, how would you feel if your best friend did something so colossally wrong that it made you doubt the very basis of your friendship? It reveals a portrait of what men can expect from their friends and themselves. If you would like more information about Art, please visit Act 2 Playhouse at www.act2.org. Finally, if you're looking for some reasonably priced, amazing Italian food, I recommend Toramina's Pizzeria and Trattoria Italian Restaurant located on 601 Valley Forge Road in Lansdale, PA. The restaurant formerly known as Portofino's Pizza is now under new ownership. I ate dinner there this past weekend and really enjoyed my meal. I got the vegetable calzone and split pizza fries with my friend. One more great thing about this restaurant is you can order food items and sizes so you have more control of the portion size and how much or how little you want to chow down on. Think you can guess the sizes I ordered? Be my guest and email me at jgimmons@transitionsradio.com. If that idea doesn't sound appetizing to you, then name the favorite local restaurant, your favorite local restaurant, and what you order, and to have the chance to have your suggestion read live on Transition.
That was awesome.
If you didn't catch all of that, my 60 seconds or less, what's on tap, please do check out my blog on transitionsradio.com on my What's on Tap page for all of that information and more. Okay, so really quick, but not as quick as that. I did originally want to talk, before I got sidetracked on my PIFA experience, about water for elephants and what I thought.
Water.
Water or water, depending on how you pronounce it. It's been a big topic tonight. So, you know, basically, this movie got a lot of harsh reviews because I read reviews before I give one just to see what everyone else thought, because as I explained with Sucker Punch, I'm very like a positive person. So I do tend to like, you know, things that I spend money to see. But and the same goes for this. This was a really good movie. I enjoyed it. The reviews bashed it. They said that there wasn't any romantic chemistry between Rob Pattinson, who actually did a good job, and this is coming from me, and Reese Witherspoon. But I think the reason they say there wasn't any chemistry is because it wasn't K-Stu. And it's obvious on Twilight that they have chemistry. So I think it was just kind of being compared to that. So that's a little bit unfair to say. Let's see. I think it was interesting that the LA Times gave it a better review than the New York Times, because obviously that's where the movie industry is. Just saying. But my favorite part of this film was Rosie, the elephant. And she is the source of justice and what is good. And I think it really ties into our main roundtable tonight. And I can't tell you what happens, really. I'm not going to. But, you know, she is definitely the hero of the movie, and I fell in love with her. So if I casted the movie, I would cast myself as Rosie the elephant. So, Reese Witherspoon was fabulous. She could have been a little bit more downtrodden in her character. She was a little bit too more like classy and upscale for the character, but she did good. I think it's because it's her signature that she acts that way. But all in all,
you have like
10 seconds. Okay. All in all, the main characters really added to the whole theme of illusion and how people really feel versus the mask they wear and pretend to feel to fit into the role society has cut out for them. So that's what this movie is really about. I do recommend it. I give it 4.5 stars. If you like The Notebook, you'll like this movie. You won't like it as much, but you'll like it.
Spoiler alert, Rosie the Elephant actually kills Osama bin Laden. Thanks,
Janine. You didn't
Janine.
Give me enough time to cover my ears for the spoiler alert. You just ruined it.
Sorry.
60 seconds or less.
Wow, Janine.
That was talent at its finest. And we were all cracking up. It was funny.
It was funny.
Amazing. It was funny.
We should do that more often.
I think we should do it more often. I think Janine is good at it.
It's the hardest I've laughed
at.
The
best part
time.
Of it, though, was the story.
Yeah.
Like 30 seconds.
I went to dinner.
So
time for serious stuff.
Interesting experience that she had at PIFA with the homeless people.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Always a good
time.
They're
unpredictable.
On to more grown-up things.
On to more grown-up things.
More transitions-worthy things.
We're talking about, it's a juicy relationship segment tonight, talking about decisions that couples come to and how they can be affected by friends and family members, the opinions of friends and family members. So I guess basically to say where I'm coming from, you know, oftentimes I think the best example I had thought of for this is for a girl's side. When you're younger, you know, you sort of are – it's fun to plan out your wedding and silly things like that, romantic things with your girlfriends. You talk about, like, dresses that your bridesmaids would have and all that stuff, and everybody shares their opinion. But when you get older and maybe you meet that person that you do want to spend the rest of your life with, we're all now in our early 20s, it's going to start happening. And then you start to say things like, oh, yeah, I can really see myself being with this person. All of a sudden you sort of get that negative, like, well, you are only this age. You're only, you know, I don't know if you should be making that decision at this time. And all of a sudden the fun friend that you had is questioning every decision that you're making. So I thought this was an interesting topic to have on the show tonight. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Of course, I always have things to say. I love your relationship, Callie. But relationship segment, Callie. And I like your relationship.
I like your relationship, too.
Just follow us around.
Really cool. Hopefully it just crashes and burns.
I like your general candor.
I do. But I think this is so relevant, especially for girls. And I've definitely, like, you know, relate to this and have been there. It's weird because... You know, there are some friends, and I think this is how you find out who your real friends are in your 20s, and I think that's another transition that you discover, because I think your friends should support you. As long as the person that they're with or that you're with is treating you right or that is treating them right, you know, that there should be support and they should be happy for you. Jealousy is such... negative emotion. It's natural. It's going to happen. But, you know, it's just, it comes off and people notice it and it's hurtful. And sometimes it ends friendships. And really, you know, if you're happy for them, they're going to be happy for you. I've been there where a friend doesn't support your relationship and it's hard. And then, like, you break out with them and they don't support that. So it's like you can't revolve your life. I guess my bottom line is you cannot revolve your life around what's going to make other people happy. At the end of the day, I am under the belief that you have to follow your heart and live your life for you. Especially if you feel in your gut that it's right. Because, like, a lot of people don't listen to their gut. So I think that's what you should do. It's hard, and people are going to say what they're going to say, but, you know, my mom always says, what everyone thinks of you is none of your business. So you just got to do your own thing, you know?
Oh, Mama Janine.
Yeah. Mama Gibbons. I think to give a more relatable example, maybe for the guys, I think at this age in our lives, it obviously is a major transition, period. And you come out of college, and you know, probably live with friends from college or home. You know, maybe have roommates, and... I'm not going to use any names or anything, but, you know, I often hear stories from, you know, my girlfriends and stuff about, you know, they're complaining because their roommate's boyfriend is over all the time, or their roommate's girlfriend is over all the time, and they want to complain about this, complain, complain, complain. Then if the roommate decides, you know, she's going to move in with her boyfriend, or the boyfriend's going to move in with the girlfriend, then it's, I can't believe they're moving in together. And it's like this constant nipping at somebody else's expense. And then there's always dropping the line, oh, she's too good for him, he's too good for her, which is one of my least favorite things to say, by the way, because I don't think you can ever judge on who is good and not good for somebody unless you know that, you know, maybe it's an abusive relationship and you know that information. But if you don't, I think that that is one of the most annoying and least supportive things that you can say to your friend. If you think, you might think you're being supportive, saying, oh, you know, I think you're too good for him, or I think, you know, you're too good for her. But to me, that is a very annoying thing to hear people say. And I always say it whenever my friends are talking about somebody else to me. I'm like, don't say that because you really don't know.
Yeah, I tell the same thing to Janine when after the show, she really just digs dirt up on everybody, including myself, right to my face. It's insane.
She just talks about you and Angela.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
No, hi, Angela.
Janine doesn't
love
do
you.
That.
But I think, you know, especially when the person is in a relationship, like at that time, you got to be supportive. When a relationship ends, that's when I find it harder, like to be honest and to be kind of hard on myself, to, especially with a friend, when you see that friend hurt, it's hard to not bash them and be like, well, this and that. But, you know, what I've learned from experience and making mistakes is that that doesn't ever, like, it makes the person feel better for a little bit. But, you know, there's like a cutoff time, I think. So, I mean, especially when they're in the relationship, I guess. I think that's when you should be supportive. When they're not, you know, I'm not going to say it's terrible to, like, say, then you come to the realization that maybe you were better off for you.
And, right. Not meant to be.
But,
Do guys really think about that?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm wondering, what do guys think about this
stuff? I don't know if we judge so much the character of...
Do guys weigh their opinions on each other about relationships?
I mean, it's not so much about the person they're in a relationship with. I think it's just like, if you want to go hang out with all your guy friends, and if they're not there, if they're whipped, I think the term was...
Whipped. That's a big one. Yeah.
If they're spending Friday night with their girlfriend, when you say, man, all I wanted to do was, you know, go out and... You know, hang out and, you know, be boys for a night or something, you know?
I only care if they're a B. If I can't hang out with them, then I automatically don't like them. So if I can't, like, if one of my friends has a girlfriend that I just can't stand, I automatically think...
It brings that girlfriend to everything, and then...
Yeah, I mean, I have friends in long-term relationships. You know, my buddy James and his girlfriend Helen have been for, like, 9 years. So, I mean, they're cool to hang out with. But, you know, if someone new comes along and, like, they don't click with the vibe that we have going, the pack will shun that new one.
See, can I just say, and I'm sorry, I think that's so unfair. It's so hard as a girl to, like, go into a new group of people. And, like, I always try to be, like, open-minded and, like, give everybody a chance, regardless of what vibes I get, which I'm not sure if it's a good idea.
Our vibe is honesty.
I know.
If you talk honestly, right. I don't care if you are, like, the exact opposite, like, neo-Nazi idealistic beliefs.
That homeless woman spoke honestly to Janine. would you let her into your wolf pack?
If she was dating one of my friends.
Oh, my God. No, Derek.
But that's what I, like, yeah, if I ask you a question and you're like, oh, well, you know, I can't. That's the vibe that throws me and my friends for an absolute loop. If I say, what's your favorite color? And you're like, well, on Tuesdays I like blue. And then, you know, but sometimes I'm not feeling blue, and then I'm like orange, and I'm just like, shut up, give me your answer. I said this before in one of your things.
Indecisiveness
just drives me up the wall.
Yeah,
I'm not indecisive. I mean, that's not me, but I hear what you're saying.
Indecisiveness.
I mean, women. Okay, so like, see, like that's like a thing that like a lot of people struggle with, and I guess sometimes. But like when somebody asks me a question, I mean, I'm just gonna answer it. Like I'm not gonna sit there and like premeditate my answer. Obviously, it's kind of hard to do. Actually,
It's gonna be hard to hang out with your couple's friends, and I think this is definitely a topic we can discuss next week because obviously there's a lot to say on it, but. You know, when you're with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, be true to who you are. And I think maybe pay attention to who your significant other's closest friends are. And sometimes it's not really okay for you to share your opinion if you don't like somebody. Like, you know, maybe you go out with your girlfriend, you don't like one of her friends. Unless she brings it up, it's completely unnecessary to be like, by the way, I can't stand your friend so-and-so.
About boundaries and respect.
Yeah, you need to respect if they have a close relationship. Now, if somebody's outwardly rude to you, you know, maybe respect that your significant other has a relationship with that person and just be like, you know, I don't want to be around. You know, and just choose to dismiss yourself from the scene when that person is around. Mm-hmm. But in most cases, I think significant others, if you're in a serious, you know, and I hate saying significant others because it's awkward, but... Whatever. If you're in a serious committed relationship, you know, you're going to care if the person you're with, if their feelings are hurt or not. And mm-hmm. whether it's not, you're going to cut a friendship off because of it, but you're certainly going to step in and be like, but to end on, we obviously got off topic here, but what Janine said, yeah, we are good with that. You know, stay true to who you are and stay true to your beliefs in your own relationship. I didn't get to talk about, you know, when you really are in maybe a destructive relationship and you do have friends sort of pulling you aside. And one thing I will say, if multiple friends of yours are pulling you aside and maybe suggesting that your relationship is abusive, is to take a closer look at it. But if people are just seem to be jealous, the best thing to do is to take the high road, and you know, you don't need to be rude back, and just, you know, ask them to please respect your decisions and then do what you want to do.
Haters gonna hate.
Haters gonna hate. And that's gonna do it for us, the relationship segment this week. It's also going to do it for Transitions. So be sure to check us out at www.transitionsradio.com.
On facebook.com/transitionsradio.
The Twitter at TransitionsR.
And every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on WYBF The Burn out of 89.1 FM, out of Radnor, Pennsylvania.
And thanks to everyone's input tonight and all of the great topics. Hopefully Janine will have a better experience with the next homeless person she comes across.
The transient population of Philadelphia.
Yes. I'm Callie McCurdy.
And I'm John Mim.
Thanks for listening to Transitions.